Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street.
Good Wednesday morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber along with Jim Cramer. Carl has the morning off. Let's give you a look at futures as we get ready for trading a half hour from now. You can see we are looking up on all the major averages. Our roadmap this morning, it starts with what they're calling the new Intel. CEO Pat Gelsinger doubling down on manufacturing, investing $20 billion in two new chip factories and claiming, quote, Intel is back. Plus a big drop. You just heard Dom talking about it. GameStop shares going to be down. The company considering selling additional equity shares. Of course, cashing in on that incredible Reddit-fueled rally. And we're also going to have an exclusive with Adobe CEO Shantanu Narayen. That's a day after the company reported strong results and, more importantly, perhaps, increased its guidance. We're going to want to talk about. But let's start off with Intel, Jim. You've been a critic of the company in the past. We've talked a good deal about it, of course. In fact, we broke the news of Mr. Gelsinger's arrival right here on this program at exactly this time. Not that many weeks ago, he is firmly in control now, setting a new plan, he says, and obviously investing a lot. They are going to be outsourcing more than they had in the past, but he says they're back. Do you agree?
Well, I think, first of all, he's got some bravado. He certainly is making a statement. He is on our network later today. There is a kind of a level of excitement from a man who started at Intel when he was 18. And he just did put on a great show. And the conference call was terrific. Do I think he got a free pass? Yes, because in the end, he did guide below consensus. I think if you try to do what he wants to do with Taiwan Semi and build your own foundries and also use Taiwan Semi will cut you off. I think that AMD has been lost in the shuffle, yet AMD is probably a couple years ahead of Intel. But I would do this. I would say this. If I were Pat and I wanted to come in hot and I wanted to make a statement both to my customers but also internally and then, of course, to Wall Street, I would do just what he did and I congratulate him. But I still say that be careful because in the end, David, when you report and your numbers are below consensus, and he said it, by the way, in what is the hottest market I've ever seen for PCs, I call into question how much you can change in a month. I mean, David, this is a battleship. And in 1 month, all these things happened. So I think we have to be a little more, nuanced. And I applaud what he's doing. But I also want to warn people who love the stock that it is very difficult to turn around Intel in just the very short time that
you pointed out, and it's true, and they will admit it as well. These are long term. These are changes that have long term implications and not necessarily things that really will affect the short term. Let's take a listen to what Gelsinger had to say on the conference call last night.
Intel is back, right? You know, this is the old Intel is now the new Intel as we look to the future. You know, we're excited for the things that we are laying out.
I see a note here from Baird this morning, though, that says Intel is going back to its core manufacturing roots, leveraging its manufacturing expertise both for internal production and foundry services. You don't agree?
Well, no. They do have someone who is terrific that can they call him Kojak, Randhir Thakur, who will do a good job. But, David, $20 billion for two new fabs.
Yep.
That don't come online until 2024.
Right.
Is that really a threat to AMD? I say no. Is talk cheap? I think that Pat laid out a great roadmap. I think he is terrific. Boy, what a change in pace from the previous CEO. But I also know they're we call it 1.5 nodes behind AMD. And I think the most important thing, David, is just understand that as exciting as it is to be building these fabs in Arizona, Intel's tried that before, and it hasn't worked. They have to go back to their roots as being what I thought in the 90s as the greatest manufacturer in the world, early 2000s, too. But the good thing is Pat was there, and he understands what that's going to be
no
like.
No doubt. So, you've been a champion of AMD, as I pointed out many times.
Well,
for years
look, starting at five.
Right. And
I got off the Intel horse.
It has been one of the best calls that you have had, Jim, and you've been consistent in it. I'm looking again at this Baird report, though. Difficult to see how AMD shares can outperform a current multiple as investors assess Intel's renewed execution. AMD remains a successful yet number two player. We doubt AMD will be able to exceed 20% market share in data center, while Intel is already coming back in PCs and emerging as a competitor to TSMC.
Oh, please. Oh, please. Lisa Su, she has a lead. Her most recent statements and the most recent conference call showed that she's become partners with a lot of companies that I never thought she'd partner with. And I really think that we have to start recentering on the idea that Pat is a great showman. I mean, when he comes on today, you are going to hear that Intel's back to the days of Andy Grove, and I wish that were the case. Intel's not back that fast. I mean, Mr. Swan ran the company. He didn't run into the ground. But, you know, when you get a new CEO, you get a lot of excitement, but this is a very big turn that has to happen over multiple years. And AMD's got Genoa. It is so far ahead of Intel.
Real quick, before I want to move away from this for a second, Stan, chips, though, because the chip supply or the lack thereof, this is a story every single day, Jim.
Well, how are they going?
It's not related to Intel, but you know, at all. But
no,
but it is a broader story. And when we come up, obviously, we hear Phillip Bowe reporting on it from the auto industry, but it affects even more than that.
Lam Research. OK, Applied Materials, KLA. But do they just suddenly have us? These are the capital equipment companies.
Yep.
Do they? He mentions ASMLF in the conference call. But do they suddenly have machines for him when everybody is back ordered? No. And I think that someone should ask Pat. Hey, do you really have the machines? Do you have? Are they going to jump the queue?
Yeah.
Ahead of Taiwan Semi for the machines that come from Lam.
Yeah.
And David, here's something.
Please,
if you're
what?
Going up and saying, listen, we're going to use Taiwan Semi, but look out, we're going to compete against Taiwan Semi. Is Taiwan Semi going to drop AMD? They go, Lisa Su, hey, listen, we're dropping you for about 9 months, and then we're going to come back to you when Pat competes against us. That's not the way this business works.
I know.
I salute Pat, but I'm just saying, let's just be a little more circumspect.
And that is fine. Well, listen, we look forward to seeing that interview on Squawk Alley.
Am I breaking the orthodox? That. Look,
no,
I'm just...
Well, you're not breaking anything. It's okay. I want to talk about GameStop. Because I want to leave us time to talk about SPACs in a bit. But
Right. Let's
talk about GameStop. It's down 11%. Reported earnings. You know, what I found so interesting is some of the research, the analysts. It just fascinates me watching them try to sort of make sense of it all. And I'll share with you, we put together quickly here two different excerpts from two different reports, one from Jefferies and one from Wedbush. So here's Wedbush. Our new price target is based upon a 20 times PE multiple applied to our newly initiated 23 estimate, plus an estimated roughly $4 per share in net cash by the end of first quarter 21. So their price target actually goes from 29 to 16. And they point out, by the way, that, you know...
16 to 29.
Yeah. No. 29 to... Sorry.
We're raising our 12-month price target to 29 to 16.
Right. They downgrade the stock and raise the price target.
The stock is at 16. Oh, no. It's at 160.
Yeah. They say, listen, the fundamentals, we believe investors expecting a financial return can, you know, that the buyers are prepared to pay in the open market. That price vastly exceeds the fundamental value we believe investors can expect. But at the same time, Jim, you got Jefferies this morning just totally revamping the way they value the company. We're pivoting, they say. We're pivoting,
pivoting
to a sales multiple. So we assume e-commerce grows at 50% of 2020 store sales transfer, applying a 20% discount. Sorry about the typo there. We were moving fast here to digital peers in the 4 to 5 range. 3.4 times we get to 175.
I know.
What are you supposed to do with this stuff?
Well, okay, so I tried to read it without the call, without the context of the stock. And they're doing so many things right. Listen up, Web, WSB, Reddit, meme people. They did a lot of good stuff. They've moved aggressively into e-com. They did a really good job. It's obvious that that Ryan Cohen is the savior. 29% of sales. That's up 191% for e-com. They cut the expenses. They're closing the stores that aren't working. Of course, that's called de-densifying, David.
De-densifying.
De-densifying. Well, learning de-densifying. A term every day.
Our comp store sales are down 9.5%. We're de-densifying. Okay.
Right. And Jenna Owens, David, a pickup from Amazon and Alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
So everything here is positive, and I can see why people shouldn't have shorted it at $15.
Yes, you can see why. Listen, it's been up here for a long time. Now, Jim, what about the potential for an equity offering?
Well, they did say, listen, they could do at the money or they could do an equity offering.
Yeah.
They at least put it out
at the market. Yeah.
Kurt Wolf, a strategic planner, he did an equity offering of his common stock in January.
Mm.
A lot of it. Now, he said, you know, a lot of people say, well, listen, it's just a fraction. But he did raise, I don't know, did substantial number of shares.
Took advantage of it,
$21 million worth.
Yeah.
Right when he had seen the half of the January numbers. And I think he just felt, well, look, at 90, you could say he's a dope. He sold some at 31 on January 13th. He looked at the numbers, and I think 31 is... He probably got to 31, and I think he was going to remember the strategic plan. He thought 31 was high.
He did, I know. Well, listen, this analyst at Wedbush says, important to note, since George Sherman arrived as CEO in mid-2019, the company's net losses have exceeded $200 million.
Right.
So the financial engineering accomplished during Sherman's tenure is a testament to his leadership and to the acumen as well of the departing CFO, Jim Bell.
I think that you said something very funny. The analyst. You see the analyst is?
No. Who?
Michael Pachter.
Oh, yeah.
What's he think about
Michael
the Netflix
Pachter.
There? How's the Netflix
that
going
was
there?
A tiny little...
Yeah, he's got a bit.
Maybe we go with the other guy at 175.
Same store sales were up 6.5. Stop the music, for heaven's sake.
No, we got to do the
stuff
music.
In the market. We got playing music?
Yeah, because we got a lot to talk about SPACs. Because that's an important part of this market. And
I didn't get to talk about how great
the window seems to be closing. No, you didn't. You're done. It's enough. It's enough
WSB,
about GameStop.
David,
in fact, get ready for Shantanu Narayen, because he's going to be joining us. Of course, he's
this is
CEO
GameStop.
Of Adobe.
Suddenly you're talking about a stock? Shantanu Narayen?
We talked enough about GameStop. We're going to take a quick break here, talk SPACs. There's a lot of stocks there, not just one. A lot.
All right, Mr. Negative.
Yeah, I'm not negative. I'm just trying to keep us on time here.
I was negative on Intel.
Yeah, they were great. You did great. SPACs. Yeah. Guys, we're going to lead in with Barry Sternlicht sound, remember? So let's take a listen to Barry Sternlicht. He was on Squawk Box earlier talking, of course, about their latest Jaws Spitfire SPAC. We talked about it yesterday. Didn't do too much, but Mr. Sternlicht had some interesting things to say about the due diligence process for SPACs that are looking for deals and how competitive it's become.
You can't compete against stupidity. We lost several companies the weeks before. One in particular where we wanted to do 60 days due diligence, and the competitor said they do 3 days due diligence. I'm like, I can't compete against that. I'm not going to do that. It's a little out of control. No, it's a lot out of control. Don't expect Wall Street to regulate the launch of SPACs. They're making too much money, and if you can walk, you can do a SPAC. Most of these companies have been theoretical companies. They make no money today, and hopefully in 5 years, they're making $8 billion.
This is a guy who's done, I think six of them, Jim. But, Sternlicht always gives you a great quote. He's obviously talking about the SPACs that have gone public that are looking for deals, competing for transactions, how he wanted to take more time, obviously, for due diligence, and what may be a lacking process of due diligence for certain SPAC sponsors. But, Jim, I also want to take a look at, as we take a look at the CNBC SPAC 50, there is now piling up a bunch of SPACs that have filed to go public but have not yet done so. And that window is closing because you've got 10 trading below 10 bucks a share.
Right.
Again, they've gone public, but they haven't yet announced their deal, remember. 289 SPAC IPOs raising $93 billion looking for deals. And then you've got a bunch that have filed, Jim, that have yet to go public. And that's where I think we need to focus, because you're not going to see 10, 12 price in a day. That is over, because these things are not moving up anymore at all. In fact, some of them are actually trading below 10 right away.
Well, Barry, that was a great interview. Barry went on and on with some really interesting stuff, talking about the customers are going to be exerting the discipline. I really urge people, they can. I don't know if they can get a copy of the interview. But one of the things the point that he made, David, is that they're good and bad. And yes. I follow Barry really closely. When Starwood Property Trust was down big, what did he do? He came on Mad Money and he said, not to worry. Things are fine. It was exactly right. The stock took off. I think that you and I both know he's a rigorous person. He does a lot of due diligence. He's just not putting his name on anything. At the same time, he really did savage. He savaged what I call the industry. And he even said there are bucket shops that are doing deals. And he did indicate that this is got to end soon.
Yeah.
I think that there are good and bad ones.
As there always will be. And you're right. Listen, I don't believe, based on numerous conversations with so many different players in this market, it's not going to disappear, Jim. It's going to be with us. We'll be talking about SPACs. It will always represent a new or different way to go public for many companies. Particularly ones that may be a bit more speculative or a little earlier in their gestation than we're accustomed to. But we're not. This tsunami may be finally coming to an end. I'm calling it a SPAC out. like, you know, like blackout, you know, kind of blackout, great spack out.
That is so good.
Thank you. I was very proud of that. Yeah.
Wow. Spack out.
Yeah. Spack out.
Better than spack attack. So we're really.
Right. I mean, we may see one or two or three. We may, but you're not going to see this avalanche any longer.
And the ones that are below 10,
for now.
Don't you get 10 bucks? Don't you arbitrage that one?
You do. You can arb that. You can, because you either get 10 bucks if you redeem, or if they don't do a deal, it's there. So the, right. I mean, it's time value of money and those things. But yeah, they're trading $9.90. You can kind of try and lock in 9 cents.
Well, they've gone to $8 the last time that there was an overload. And so you, those.
But not the ones, I don't believe ones that have yet to do their deal.
Right. And I want to point out, David, if you go over what he's saying point blank, he is saying that there's just a lot of companies that are, I'm going to use the word worthless.
Yeah. Well, listen, we go through the presentations and we look at the projections. Many of them are based on 2025 or 26 revenues and or sometimes EBITDA, and the multiples are fairly high. Some are going to win, though. I mean, all you need is one big winner if you go, you know, out of 10.
That's
very
true.
If you get a 10 bagger. So who knows, Jim?
Maybe do what we call field bet when we go to play the ponies.
But this is starting to at least, again, it's going to be with us for good. We're going to be talking about it, but this great moment we've gone through, or 291 or whatever that number was, 289 SPAC IPOs in, what, a little more than 2.5 months, that is going to slow down dramatically.
Yeah, I think that we're going to look at this day and go back and look at Sternlicht's interview and say it really was the SPAC out. Your SPAC out comment, his comments. They're beginning to see some secondaries. We also have some primaries. QuantumScape, which is the one that you isolated, they did a big deal last night.
Yep.
They got the money.
They got.
And that means they could charge ahead.
And that's been a great one.
And
at 57, that's still an incredible win. And for the sponsors there, oh my God, they're printing money. And let's not forget, that's behind all of this.
But you
money,
are so
money,
right.
Money.
You are good. The SPAC app.
You like that?
No, I love it.
All right, we got nothing but love for each other. We got a mad dash coming up as well. And don't forget, opening bell 10 minutes from now. Stay with us on Squawk on the Street. You know, it's hump day. Just want to let you know. And we're standing again. We're not the NYC, but at
so
least we're
great.
Standing.
So great.
We're doing a mad dash.
Yeah.
Wednesday,
close,
of course.
Not
what
close.
We, what
not
we
too
like.
Close.
No, not too close. But we're getting closer.
Yes.
Yeah. General Mills.
Okay, so David, what we're trying to monitor right now are companies that did incredibly well during the lockdown, all right? And one of them that did very well was General Mills, because this is an ultimate pantry stock. But, David, they announced today they see organic growth only at 3.5%. Now, they are going back with the repurchase. I really like that. But, David, there's deceleration here. They had an 8% increase in sales. Operating profit was very good. I love the fact that you're going to start talking about dividend increase. That's what you used to like about General Mills. But, David, the thing that I point out is that, once again, if you're buying what worked, it's not working.
And so do you believe a potentially 4% decline when we get started with trading a few minutes from now is justified?
Well, I mean, look at Clorox. I mean, I look at Kellogg. These stuff. But then again, PepsiCo is up 7 points this week. I wanted a little bit better from General Mills. I wanted a little better guidance. I just pointed out, because those who go at home, look through your portfolio. If you have something that was a big win, you're going to have to reconsider, because we're going to have Adobe on later. That's an example of a big win that then became a continued big. What's that picture of me?
No, it's Jeff Harmening.
I'm not running General
Mills. He's coming on today at 3 o'clock with Sarah and Wilf.
Well, that has to stop. I mean, I want to be one with him, and it'll be like, you know, which one of us is talking?
They got to ask him about this Cinnamon Toast Crunch thing. I don't know if you've been following it on Twitter.
No,
some guy found some weird stuff in a box.
Well, I hope they. Jeez. But anyway, it's a great company. It's a great American company. But I'm really using it as a paradigm for a Zoom, a General Mills, a DocuSign. Who has the ability to be able to go through, like Amazon, very positive note about Amazon today, and capitalize off of what happened, versus who is, wow, that was just that moment in time. Campbell's has got that same problem, very well run. Hershey, not as much, because cocoa prices haven't gone up.
All right. Opening bell after this. About 2.5 minutes before we get started with trading. Let's go over to Jim here. It's one I like to ask, of course, these mornings when Carl is out. What is the key to this market, Mr. Kramer?
David, do you remember when your kids were little and they were scared of Cruella de Vil?
Yes.
I think that others should be scared of Cruella de Vil because Disney is just going all Disney Plus. I mean, they are really pushing this. And so you're going to get a Black Widow. Okay, which is going to be, that's a very important movie.
Yep.
And you're going to get Cruella. I regard this, Black Widow's pushed back to July 9.
Right.
But I think this is just fantastic for Disney Plus. They're basically winning the tug of war with some of what I regard as these marginal companies that are in the theatrical business. And David, it's something to watch because we have a big offering in Viacom today, that's going to be priced?
Without a doubt. Well, we should make sure people understand they're going to be releasing Cruella and Black Widow on the same day that they're in movie theaters. So
right.
No window again, similar to what they did. Well, actually, that Pixar movie that they released, I don't believe there were movie theaters open at the time, or not many.
Right.
But this is a new, this is just the new normal.
Right. And we don't know what they'll charge for them.
Right.
For Disney Plus.
Right.
But one more reason to own Disney. And David, they are really doing this thing right. And if I were Adam Aaron, I'd like to get Adam on the phone or have him on AMC. And I'm sure, look, Adam's doing his best to get things open. But I have to tell you, Disney Plus, a lot of people, there's a 70-inch screen TV that's been in the hall next to me for too long.
Yep.
At our office here. And I'll tell you, I would much rather have that with some natural popcorn, not that stuff that has the faux butter. Sit back. A Diet Coke that cost me 32 cents rather than $32, and watch at home. So that's the real competition. We all got the big screen TVs.
We do.
I'll take that 70-inch screen home if someone doesn't clean up our hall.
We got a bunch of TVs around this place. It's kind of not unexpected. By the way, WandaVision, I don't know if you watched it. It was great.
WandaVision?
Yeah.
I'm watching
that show on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Catching up.
Really enjoyed it. All right. We're going to tell you who was doing the ringing here at the big board. DigitalOcean celebrating its IPO today. We're going to speak with the CEO. It's a cloud computing company. They'll be speaking to the guys in Squawk Alley. Over at the NASDAQ, another IPO, ACV Auctions. That's an online marketplace for auctioning used cars.
Wow. Okay.
As we watch the real-time exchange right back here at our headquarters.
Where's all the money coming from?
Years of saying back there at headquarters, now we're here at headquarters.
Where is the money going to come from when we get a deal too far, kind of like a bridge too far?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we're going to have a bridge too far. Gene Hackman was the Polish Army?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Where is the money going to, what are you talking about?
At a certain point, there'll be too many deals. A marginal deal will come,
yeah,
and it will go below the bid, and then another will go below. Then there'll be five Chinese companies that go below the bid.
Oh, I see.
And then there'll
You're
be secondaries galore,
right.
And yeah. We're going to get back, David, to what you and I know is IPO hell.
Well, you don't.
Not just SPAC out.
You don't do them, that's all. You just don't do it. If the demand's not there, you don't do them. They sit on the shelf.
Well, do you think the SPACs will stop? I mean, these SPAC people.
I think they're going to slow down. We were talking about that for just a little while ago, yes. It seems as though, based on conversations with participants in that marketplace and the bankers who bring them public, that there is going to likely be a slowdown if, in fact, you continue to see a number of SPAC IPOs trade at or below the $10 price.
Well, I just see this.
And because you're not going to get as much demand, right? The demand has been there. Now, remember, they're $215 million, they're $300 million. They're not enormous as you take a look at our SPAC 50, by the way.
Right.
That is SPACs that have priced but have not done their deal. Then we've got an index of those that have announced a deal. And that's a different, that's post, there's that one, post deal. And then when they close the deal, then they're not SPACs anymore, a la QuantumScape, what you were talking about, which is issuing stock, but it's not a SPAC anymore, it's just a company.
We have to watch. I mean, look, Apple, very positive note out today, the stock's doing nothing.
Right.
Adobe, really fabulous quarter, fantastic guidance, stock's doing nothing.
Yep.
Intel's up on a lot of hope. Notice I didn't say hype. Viacom's out there with a gigantic deal. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Viacom down, as you pointed out, for the
right.
second day. It was down yesterday. They're raising $3 billion, something that we were talking about they would likely, should probably do, and it's going to help them for streaming. You were just talking about Disney. The cost of these streaming services is enormous. Let's not forget, Disney's not going to break even on it till when? 2024, right? So,
right. I still hope they'll pull that forward. But
yeah, they might, but the cost is enormous. And when you're a Viacom and you're potentially doing things for your own, for Paramount Plus, as opposed to selling them, I mean, there's cost there. And so they're raising $3 billion. $2 billion common, right. $1 billion of preferred, and the stock's getting hit off the second day.
That's but, look, what has staying power? Okay, Lam Research is going to have staying power, Applied Materials, KLA,
right.
Because there's Pat Gelsinger saying, listen, we're going to build foundries. And,
yep.
But you're not, again, those companies are backordered tremendously. I'm just saying, be careful here. There's some really good companies whose stocks should be up right now. And I think a lot of it is because there's too many companies and not enough buyers.
Too many companies, not enough buyers.
What's happening right now? Today's the day.
Could be.
There's positive note. Tesla, it's barely in. David, the SPAC out.
Does that have an implication more broadly for the overall stock market, though, Jim? Or is it just going to be this pocket of new issues?
No, I think there's going to have to be some discipline here. And there were some good articles about how, where are the stimmies? What happened to the stimmies? You get the stimulus check, the younger people, you got a Robin Hood deal. Now, David, the Robin Hood deal, is that a deal that you can't wait for if you're an investor? Wow, I got to get on some Robin Hood, even though the it looks like the Robin Hood, the people who are buying Robin Hood just got GameStopped.
Listen, what Robin Hood went through, and what was it, $3 billion they had to raise in additional capital?
Over a weekend, yeah.
Yeah. It does make you question or hope that they've got their business model intact and or have changed it enough to so that they're in a position to be able to weather any storm that might come at them, unexpected as it might have been, of course, which we never could have anticipated the events of that week.
Right. But look, I want to watch the NASDAQ more than I want to watch the industrials, because I think the industrials, the money goes back to the industrials. The money goes back. I mean, I don't want to be too negative. Estee Lauder got upgraded. And it was just talking about how China might be good and the stock is flying. It's just that I'm more worried about the concentration in tech because there's just so many tech deals.
Speaking of tech deals, I did want to IPHI is the symbol.
What, the Infi, the deal that Marvell finished? I thought that was amazing that Marvell got that.
And the Chinese approved it.
Wasn't that incredible?
Yeah, Chinese antitrust regulators approve it. I think the special meeting's on the 15th of April, so it'll close fairly soon. Stock is up 7%. Symbol there is IPHI. Pretty big deal for Marvell. And again, it's that China approval, Jim, that perhaps got some people's attention because it was not expected, at least not in that time frame. And they got it. Now, AMAT's still waiting on one that they've been waiting a long time on. We know this is an important component of M&A, getting that China approval. You can go through any number of names where it's an important part of the process, and there's still questions. So this one is interesting.
Yes.
Is it a one-off? Is it sort of, hey, you know, or does it mean something?
No, it's not one-off because Marvell Technology is a leader in 5G. And, of course, the United States has been very, very tough on China 5G. With Huawei, I wonder if, David, I'm going to use the term olive branch, if this isn't the beginning of what I regard as a thawing of commerce that the Chinese were saber-rattling for home, Biden saber-rattling for home. But the fact that they let this deal through, David, I think is significant when it comes to geopolitical discussions. It should have been turned down. Under President Trump, this would have been turned down.
You think so?
Absolutely. Know so.
Then it is going to be taken, generally speaking, as a positive by those who are pursuing deals that will require Chinese approval. But, getting insight into that process is a very difficult thing, Jim.
It sure is. All right. Well, let's talk about a company that had just a remarkable quarter, which to me is putting some pressure on the market because it's magnificent. Adobe announcing fiscal first quarter results that just crushed expectations. And more importantly, they saw fiscal guidance. They raised financial guidance after the first quarter. That's very interesting for a company that's incredibly conservative. So joining us now in a CNBC exclusive is the chairman and CEO of Adobe. That's Shantanu Narayen, who is a titan. Shantanu, congratulations on just a monster quarter. You really blew out the numbers.
Thank you, Jim. And it's always great to be back on your show. And you're right. I mean, when we talk about what's happened in this world, and moving from where digital was part of it to a digital-only world, I think all three of our businesses did exceedingly well.
I absolutely love what you talked about many times on the conference call, which I urge people, if you buy Adobe, you got to listen. Digital is mission critical, not nice to have. Big change.
It really is. I mean, if you think about the fact that it's only been a year since the pandemic and how the world has completely pivoted to engaging digitally. And so whether you're an enterprise wanting to acquire or service customers, whether you're an educational institution trying to educate, whether you're an entertainment company trying to entertain, I think the future of work, learn, play is all going to be just digital. And that's where I think, you know, we have these unique opportunities to continue to invest in innovation and deliver great value.
I want people to know there are three important clouds here. There's a creative, there's document, there's experience. Every one of them was better than expected. And the one, I know maybe it's short-sighted, but you know, Shantanu, when creative was only 19, some of these analysts went nuts, and you're back to 20. But the most important thing, I think, is that you are so optimistic for the future for all three of those clouds.
Well, if you think about creative, Jim, we've always said everybody has a story to tell. And if you think about the fact that all these mobile devices are not just consumption devices, they're creation devices. You see what's happening with immersive media. I mean, think about it. We used to be able to do live photo shoots. And now all of those live photo shoots, if you're trying to make films, is all happening digitally. If you're a K-12 student who's trying to create a book report, that has to be done digitally. And collaboration is underlying all of that. And so I think on the creative side, we just look at it and say it's the golden age of design, whether you're interacting on a mobile app, whether you're interacting in a physical store, on a particular screen, whether you're in a car. And so that's where we are the platform of choice. Certainly stock as a service has also done well. On the document side, Jim, as you know, I mean, everybody is saying we cannot be in a physical location, so we have to electronically sign things. Our sign business grew 50% year over year because it enables you to automate that last mile. And then on the powering digital businesses, as we've touched upon so many times, it really is about if you can't deliver that personalized experience in the last millisecond, customers have such zero tolerance for a bad experience right now.
You are also, I think, king of trying to figure out where digital is. You have Adobe Digital Index, which I have used because it's been the most rigorous. And you are forecasting some terrific numbers for first $1 trillion year in e-commerce coming.
We think so. And you're right. I mean, the fact that we have our pulse on what people are trying to do with all of their digital storefronts, what's happening on commerce, where are people's sentiment in terms of, you know, what's hot and what's not. And you're right, the Adobe Digital Index predicts that next year is going to be the first trillion year in commerce. And I don't think there's any looking back because we have made this shift and, you know, the world's moved to a digital first world. And I think consumers are recognizing how wonderful that is. So, yeah, we just continue to think that everything is going to be procured digitally.
Shantanu, it's David Faber. As one of the largest players in the so-called creator economy, you know, I wonder, do you see Adobe playing an important role in NFTs? If, in fact, you actually think that's a real thing, or perhaps you don't, but I'd love to get your opinion.
Well, David, it's actually been interesting because some of this NFT stuff that's been done has been done using our tools. And, you know, it's been nice to see the tweets. We've always taken the approach, David, that our job is enabling that for others. And so, you know, when we talk about Creative Cloud, David, it's the one-stop shop from inspiration to monetization. But we've never been in the content creation business ourselves. And I think digital and some of the works that are being created digitally and the NFTs are just truly spectacular. So you're the expert on what the appropriate valuation for that is. But I think the trend in terms of recognizing that digital art is really special and has value, I think we're going to see that trend continue.
And another thing that we talk a lot about here, I'd love to get your take on, is SPACs. And I ask that because Adobe, like a lot of companies, does smaller private company acquisitions. And I wonder, has that market and the enthusiasm that those private companies are meeting in the SPAC world, has that precluded your ability to actually perhaps buy companies you otherwise might have, given their valuations are soaring?
I think if you take the big picture on this, David, I mean, it's clear that there's so much money in the system that people are finding very, very different financial instruments by which they can buy companies. And I think the really good companies, there'll always be a market for them. There'll always be the appropriate valuation. But I do think there's an element of people are able to raise all of this money. Unless you find great companies to buy, how do you put that money to good use? I think as it relates to Adobe, I mean, we're always looking at it when we buy companies in terms of being able to say, do we have a shared vision and can we help scale that business? So we just acquired Workfront. Workfront, which is in marketing workflow, had a really great quarter. And so we actually don't worry about the fact that we will be able to acquire the right assets because we do have the capital, but we will be disciplined, David. And if there's frothiness in the market, we're willing to, you know, let that play out because I think at the end of the day, real companies will, you know, find a way to break through the clutter.
All right, so Sean, every time that you do a comms call, I learn something new. Also, when you do your giant fest, I learned something new. I remember you introduced Sensei on Mad Money. But now I feel just bereft because how do I not know liquid mode? You're telling us we're all using liquid mode. Could you describe what we're all using? Because I better get on it.
Well, you know, what's happened, Jim, is mobile is where everybody is accessing all this information. And as you know, there are trillions of PDFs out there. So, you know, our researchers said, how do we understand every single PDF that was ever created? And this is a PDF that might have been created 20 years ago where we don't know what the structure was. Was it a table? Was it a Excel spreadsheet? What liquid mode allows you to do on a mobile device is to say by clicking on a PDF and the liquid mode approach, it actually completely makes it responsive. We go in there, we analyze the structure, we understand the semantic usage of what the author was intending to do. And I think the experience is incredible. I was on the road, I was actually traveling in India, Jim, and our entire earnings prep we did, you know, with me on a small phone with low bandwidth, and liquid mode changed my life. And so, you know, when you're trying to fill out a form on a mobile device, when you're trying to electronically sign something on a mobile device, if we can analyze the PDF, understand the semantic meaning of what you're trying to do and make it more intuitive, more fun, I think we're delivering value. So definitely try it out. I'd love to get your feedback.
All right. Last question. First, I do want to comment. John Murphy, wish him the best of luck. Fabulous CFO. Be missed because he's just great. You did reference only once, though, the partnerships with Microsoft and ServiceNow. You called them out. But these are now key, right? It's almost a triad. You over and over again, you three win a lot of business together.
Well, we were one of the first companies to say that, you know, when we think about cloud-based approaches, we really have to have a preferred partner. And Microsoft was that preferred partner. We had the shared vision of saying, how do they support Azure? They have Dynamics. We have the Experience Cloud that's clearly the leading platform. And together, if we can make sure that we are doing the integration, that's delivering great value to customers. So Satya is doing an incredible job there. Same thing with Bill. And Bill, Satya, and I have actually created relationships even when Bill was at SAP. And so with ServiceNow, as they are completely automating what you can do within an enterprise, they still need the ability to. What's the core content management? Well, that's Adobe. What's the core signing? Well, that's Adobe. And, you know, what they have done is this incredible developer environment to create these applications. So when you can come together on behalf of the customer and find a way in which both of us can monetize it, you know, those are the lasting relationships that, you know, really change the world.
Well, they matter tremendously. I want to congratulate you, Shantanu, for just a terrific quarter and for another learning experience, because we all do learn that we are creative. And every year there's someone new, and there are kids in first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth that realize they're creative, and that's empowering. Thank you for empowering maybe billions of people. Great to see you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, David, for having me.
David, it's yours.
Thank you, Jim. Great to have him. Let's get over to Rick Santelli now. We've got breaking economic data, and of course, we'll also get a bond report. Rick?
Yes, David, the MARKIT market PMIs are out. These are March preliminaries, which means in 2 weeks we'll get the finals. 59.0 is the headline manufacturing PMI. And just to give you an idea, the post-COVID high was actually January at 59.2, so very close. The remaining two, very nice, strong numbers. 60.0 on services. How does that compare? Well, that would be a post-COVID high if it sticks. And 59.1 is the composite. That would also be a post-COVID high if it sticks. I take that back. 59.5 last look was the high. So this is very close. Very solid numbers. Now let's get to the market. And if we look at what's going on in 10 years at a 24-hour chart, you could definitely see it looks mostly like it's climbing. And a two-day chart gives you an idea that it really started to climb when it was above yesterday's low yields. And if you go all the way back to Friday, you can see we've reversed a bit. And a month-to-date chart, well, it's a solid month. As a matter of fact, we're up 25 basis points in yield for the month of March. Let's call it a quarter point tightening, shall we? And much of the retracements that we had didn't last very long. And I think that's key because that really has been the pattern since the end of February's Fed meeting, where we continue to see rates climb. And if we switch gears a bit and look at the dollar index, once again, it may be the area that gives you the most information if you're investing in U.S. markets. Why? Because it's the only throttle that I see that's giving us a clue as to how we're supposed to interpret Janet Yellen and, of course, Chairman Jay Powell. It really is strong. Now, as you look at a 24-hour chart of the dollar index, it looks mostly sideways. Whoa. But then when you go to a one-week chart, no way is it sideways. As a matter of fact, that one-week chart, we're up over a cent, up 1.23%. Just in five trading days. And if you open the chart up to early November, if we close here, this will basically be a four-plus month high in the dollar index. So we want to see how that testimony on the Senate side goes today, see how much more horsepower all this stimulus is going to give that dollar index. Jim and David, back to you.
Rick Santelli, we're getting some breaking news now on tomorrow's big hearing involving technology CEOs. Let's get to Elon Mui. She has the latest for us. Elon.
Well, David, the focus of that hearing tomorrow is on misinformation on social media. And in their written testimony, the tech CEOs outline the steps they've taken to combat it so far, but they also acknowledge that more can be done. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg argues that the content on the platform is divisive because society is divided. He says his company has removed 12 million pieces of misinformation around COVID and 150 million false claims surrounding the election. Facebook has also tripled the number of people working in safety and security to 35,000 since the last election. Now, on the critical question of Section 230, the tech liability shield, he says that Facebook is open to reform. He said that liability protection should be contingent on having a system to remove harmful and hateful posts. Now, he says platforms should not be held liable if a particular piece of content evades its detection. That would be impractical for platforms with billions of posts per day, but that they should be required to have adequate systems in place to address unlawful content. As for Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, he outlined areas where his company and the industry can improve: transparency, procedural fairness, algorithmic choice, and privacy. But he said that right now there is a trust deficit, not just on social media, but across institutions. He said, "Our efforts to combat misinformation must be linked to earning trust. Without trust, we know the public will continue to question our enforcement actions." Guys, meanwhile, as for Google's CEO, Sundar Pichai, what he said is that he reiterated his opposition to repealing or reforming Section 230. He warned that there could be unintended consequences, including both harming free expression and the ability of platforms to take responsible action to protect their users in the face of constantly evolving challenges. David, that's going to make for some fascinating exchanges with lawmakers tomorrow.
We'll be covering it closely, of course. And Elon, appreciate you bringing that testimony to us. Thank you. Later on Squawk Alley, Pat Gelsinger. We talked a lot about Intel at the beginning of the show. He's going to join the crew on Squawk Alley. Lots of questions. Be interested in hearing those answers. We'll take a quick break. We're right back. We were talking a lot during the break, Jim, but I don't think you told me what you're doing for stop trading.
Well,
so
David,
like everybody else, I'm waiting.
I was talking about Adobe. Now, look, David, people don't like tech today because interest rates are ticking up. So it's a wrong FANG day.
Okay.
Wrong FANG. Diamondback Energy is the leader. And the other FANG that we effectively loved at one point is all falling short. And that's because oil's going up and rates are going up. And when that happens, people buy the industrials and they sell all these great tech stocks like FANG. And this is a good for whoever doing an ETF. You do a FANG versus FANG and you go make $50 million and I make nothing.
FANG versus FANG.
It's right? Okay. Yeah, FANG like spy FANG versus spy when you're growing up with when you went to the dentist. So anyway, I pointed out.
Thank you.
What a show.
Yeah, interesting show.
You want a hot stock that fits this theme?
Sure.
I have Nucor on tonight.
You do?
Yes.
Okay.
Largest steel maker in this country. And it is doing incredibly well on every single line. And then, David, a Reddit Wall Street Bets extravaganza.
Tell me.
UWM. This is UWM is the company that people want almost as much as GameStop. And it's a wholesale lender. Boring.
Yeah.
But we might make some fireworks about it.
You will?
Yes.
That's what a company they want, United
Wholesale
Mortgage?
Well, because it's got a big short position, and they're going up against Rocket. And well, you know what, David? We're going to get to the bottom of it.
You will? You promise me that?
Oh, no.
I'm going to ask those tough, really tough questions?
Actually, I have a lot of tough questions.
Do you?
Yeah.
No, the guy's going to probably cancel now.
No, he's not.
No?
Because they are making it so that if you do business with Rocket, you can't do business with them.
No
and
kidding.
I want to see whether that's a good idea or a bad idea.
All right. You got my attention.
What a show.
Yeah.
How's Intel doing there?
It's hanging in there. It's up a little bit. We'll be doing it again tomorrow, Jim. So rest up.
Rest up?
Yeah, rest
up. That's nonsense.
I know. You never rest. You need to rest.
Rest up. I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, I know. And then you wake up 2 hours later.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.